Step into the wealth elevator and join our 12,000 plus member community who have passively invested over $200 million to acquire over $2.1 billion in commercial real estate. Sign up by going to thewealthelevator.com/club, and here we go.
This is a story about a dude named Lane. He moved to the mainland and bought one place to stay. And then one day he went and tried to rent them out. And then he became one real investor man.
Hey, Simple Passive Cash Flow listeners. Today we are going to learn about something a little bit off the wall in terms of investing. Got my buddy Matt here, Matt Pinchney, and his wife Erica. How's it going, guys?
Great.
Matt and I met a few years ago in an apartment investing group. I think we sat actually next to each other, right? And we just kind of stayed in contact, a lot of common friends. One day on your Facebook feed, I saw this super, what they call it, headshots?
Yeah.
And I was like, what's that, Matt? Is this like a joke or something?
Yeah, that was from many, many, many years ago when I used to be an actor.
Yes, I kind of realized this guy who's been investing in single family homes and now apartments for like 13 years, over 1,000 units, had this previous life as an actor. So I started asking questions and you kind of told me about this world of investing in Broadway shows. You kind of mentioned that your wife Erica here is really the brains behind it, or partner in crime. Erica, kind of introduce like your background and how you kind of got started in this thing and...
Sure.
How it all happened.
Like most people in the business, including Matt, I started as a performer and thought I was going to be an actress. And really, when I went to college was when I kind of solidified that I learned that there's a whole other business side of show business, right? It's called show business for a reason. I decided I no longer wanted to try and be an actor, though I kept studying acting and directing and learning the ins and outs of the business fully. But I really wanted to focus on the management side of Broadway theatrical entertainment. So pretty quickly, I started working in professional theaters in Chicago, which was at Northwestern University. Just kind of followed my heart and never really looked back. I grew up on the East Coast, so I moved back to New York, which is obviously the mecca of Broadway and all things theater. And I very quickly started working for some Broadway producers and general managers. So if you will, like the CEO and the CFO of Broadway companies, very quickly they were raising money for shows. Like you, I started asking a lot of questions. And next thing I knew, I was raising money at the time for my first off-Broadway show. And then it just spiraled from there.
And someone has actually told me this in the Hollywood world. And you hear about the director and then the producer role. Apartment investing, for example, the director is sort of like the operator. And the producer's kind of like the syndicator in a way.
The way that I would say it is that like the general manager of or general partner syndication or co-sponsor is sort of like the producer. But then you've also got the property management company. And the property management company and or the operator, right? That sort of role is very similar to what you'd find in Broadway as general manager, right? The general mm-hmm. management company kind of keeps day-to-day mm-hmm. running payroll, that sort of thing, where the producer is overseeing the entire vision, putting all mm-hmm. the money together, right?
Yeah, the producer also is a lot of times where the idea may start, or they may meet an author or meet a songwriter and say, I have an interest in developing a show with you. So the producer is really, in a lot of ways, the master puppeteer, if you will. They're the ones who kind of have all the strings dangling, but they're the overarching presence and they're the overarching ones who make the decisions. The general manager's focus really is that of financial oversight, and the general manager is really looking at the budget, sticking to the budget, how much money is in the bank, how are the reserves going, when can we do a distribution, and the general manager will make recommendations to the producer, but ultimately it's the producer's decision on how to spend the money, you know, where's an advertising focus going to be, are we going to cut a new commercial, are we going to change casting, all of those types of things.
So I went to New York recently and I saw like Book of Mormon, it's pretty funny.
Yeah.
That's the end I see, right, the end product. But how does this all begin, you know, the concept of a show, how does these things start?
Many, many years before you're sitting in the theater is when it starts. For example, I think it's widely reported that Hamilton, it took 7 years to write Hamilton from the time that the author Lin-Manuel Miranda, read the book by Ron Chernow and thought, oh, this could be a musical, and then developed it and went through workshops. And all that time he was working with a producer. Some shows take more time, some shows take less time, but it's definitely a process of years. You also, you know, there's legal things that you have to make sure are in place. For example, if there are any other underlying rights, do anything belong to a different estate? Might a film company have the option on the property? And then, of course, building the creative team. Who is going to be the director? Who is going to be the choreographer? Who are all your designers? How much is it going to cost overall in setting those budgets? And then the path to Broadway can be varied. It's very unlikely that a show, you know, I always joke and say, it's not like Coca-Cola is just going to take a new flavor and put it on the shelves in the grocery store, right? So Broadway shows will normally have some sort of pre-Broadway tryout, workshop, production or something to see, is this right? Is it working? Is the actress the right actress? Are the songs landing? Are the jokes in a show like Book of Mormon, are the jokes landing? Are they too offensive? You know, all of those questions are
And some shows might do that several times to get it right. And sometimes they get it right away.
And sometimes they do all those things and they still don't get it right. But
I'm super excited about a new program I'm rolling out that's going to reinvent scammy real estate education programs. So excited, like Marie Kondo cleaning stuff up excited. Announcing my new mastermind program, which consists of a closed member site with 27 packed weeks of content, plus bi-weekly group video conference calls to ask whatever. Half of the calls will be centered around granular investing tactics, and the other half will be holistic wealth building strategies that I have learned from the wealthy. That's 25 plus hours of group coaching and masterminding, and a secret Facebook group too. I know what you're thinking, not another flippin' Facebook group. Well, this one's gonna be different, more intimate, exclusive, and no cheapskates or shady vendors in it. I've been coaching individual clients over the past couple years, and I figured out what you guys need and a way to provide it in a cost-effective way. Learn more, go to simplepassivecashflow.com/journey and join before the first cohort fills up and the introductory pricing goes away.
So how much does it cost to put on a production? Like, what's the order of magnitude here?
Sure. Broadway is broken into two pretty distinct categories, which is plays versus musicals. Musicals are much more expensive. You have several key positions on a musical that are not necessary on a play. So the core team on a play is really just the director and the designers, and you probably have a few less designers. On a musical, you'll have the director, you'll have a music director, you'll have a music department that's overseeing the orchestrations and just the overall size of the music company and additional music or underscoring or things that may need to be written. You'll have a choreographer, which you don't typically have in a play, and you may have, depending on the design needs of the show, you may have additional designers as well. A typical play is normally anywhere between 2 to 6 million sitcoms is on the very high end. I'd say the average plays are way more between like 2 and 5 million, 2 and 4 million. Musicals, on the other hand, normally start, a really cheap musical would probably be $7 or $8 million. And they go up, the norm now is hovering on average around 20, 25 million for a musical. A lot of times you shoot for a musical to be in the teens lately, currently, but it can range. It totally depends on the size of the cast, the size of the orchestra, the production values, how many set pieces are there, how elaborate are the costumes, things of that nature.
Because these days, most of the popular ones are musicals these days.
Right. There's always plays. The plays just don't tend to get as much attention. The musicals are what, especially in a tourism world, and they have bigger budgets, so the advertising is going to be bigger, and they tend to be what more tours successfully throughout the country.
I'd say with a play, you're really hoping for a really strong, I mean, it's true for both, but with a play, I think you're really hoping for a very strong review and winning that Tony. Because if you don't win the Tony Award as a play, it's very hard to sort of get noticed, I think, where there are musicals that don't win the Tony and don't get good reviews, like Wicked, which has been running forever and is an astronomical hit. I think a play that gets not a great review and doesn't win the Tony would not be running for that length of time.
Yeah, I mean, it's simple economics based on your tourism dollars, that most people in the country, or most people in general who see shows, see one show a year. So there's your first statistic. Most of the times that one show is going to be a big Broadway musical. And you have to think a lot of times, even people who are, you know, hot on whatever the new musical is, they still may not have seen Book of Mormon, because when Book of Mormon first came out, it was completely sold out for a very long time. So there's still very popular musicals. There's always going to be about 5 to 8 musicals that people still haven't seen that are running because they're such juggernauts. And that's where the bulk of the business goes. 50% of the ticket buyers in New York for Broadway are tourism driven. So a lot of it is outside tourism coming to New York to see a Broadway show. Whereas with plays, it's much more of a New York centric focused, you know, we call them the folks who read the New Yorker, if you will, or Atlantic Monthly. You know, it's much more kind of your well-educated, sophisticated theater goer, and the plays tend to be incredibly topical, somewhat political, things of that nature.
So right now you got the listener at home who got cut from their high school play, feels this is the way they can get redemption, and on the outer, you know, the ring of the cash flow game, right? They got all these like crazy ideas or the higher level goals, and he wants to buy a play now. So right. How does this happen? Like, how can the regular person sort of invest in Broadway, or is, you know, more of an insider's game?
Well, you know, the interesting thing is it's very similar to investing in a real estate syndication. The way that these things are set up, there are investors that can invest, and you're investing just like you would, like I said, in real estate, as if you were a limited partner, right? So there's an entity that's created, and you're investing in that entity. You don't have control over what's going on, right? There's the producer that acts as the general partner, and investment increments can vary widely depending on what the producers set it, but usually there's a minimum of, you know, 25,000 to 100,000 is what we're usually seeing, somewhere in between there. The thing to know is that this is super, super risky, but it's also got an unbelievably high reward. And the rewards that Eric and I have gotten from investing in theater have far outweighed, when you look at an ROI, than anything we'll probably ever will see in real estate. I mean, if you get the right one, they're very far and few between, but if you get the right one, it can do really well.
It's kind of reminds me of like oil and gas investing, you know, because you kind of laugh about it. It's like literally drilling for oil, right? Like, I've talked to some of these oil and gas guys, and they'll drill 10 wells and only like one or two of them will actually pump oil. The rest will just be complete duds that you just wasted all this money on. But, you know, a lot of times it's for taxes.
Right. But the one that does pump oil, right?
Right. So what's the kind of the battering average, if you will, for one of these type of investments?
Well, the one I'll say something about that, you know, Eric can talk a little bit more in generalities about the batting average. What I will say is the way that Eric and I approach it, I think, gives us a higher chance of success, because we don't invest on these on a daily basis or even a yearly basis. It's not how we make our income. You know, Erica is a full-time theatrical producer. She's the general manager here in Boston at the Colonial Theater. I'm a real estate investor full-time. So we have our full-time jobs, and this is something that we do when the right opportunity presents itself. So we only invest and or raise capital for shows that are right. And so that tends to be once every 2 to 3 years. And we look at it based on 3 criteria. We're looking at who's the creative team, who is the general management, you know, the financial team behind it and the producer, and then also what is the actual show. So we get approached, Erica gets approached very often with shows that may be running money, may be looking to have people, you know, raise money for them, but Erica will decline, just like, as I'm sure you know, Lane, you and I look at deals all the time. You know, sometimes people ask us to do a deal and we take a look at it, we look at the underwriting, we're like, you know what, we don't feel comfortable with it. You know, they're making risky assumptions.
I'll mention onto that, you know, with apartment investing or any real estate investing, for the most part, that's especially stabilized buildings.
Yeah.
Maybe it's what, half the numbers, half the people. But as I understand, with these more riskier investments, or like I talk to people in tech startups, they say it's 90 or 90% the person, 1% the idea. What are your thoughts in this realm?
I've heard that a lot. And I think that that's rung true for me. I think what I always, I have the little spiel sometimes that I give to people when I'm raising money, which is, do not give me this money if, which might be an interesting way to start a conversation about raising money.
It's basically like a verbal PPM.
Right. But I'm basically saying it is just as likely. It's not just as likely. It's like Matt said, based on the criteria that we have, we feel like the ones that we go after better chance. But at the end of the day, there are so many outside factors that we just can't account for. So we're not here to say that we've never lost money on a Broadway investment. We have. But when we've hit on a Broadway investment, it's more than made up that loss in tenfold. So some people I know who invest in Broadway look at it as kind of a mutual fund and say, I'm going to pick 4 or 5 shows over a 5-year period. And one of them is probably going to flop. A couple of them will probably return most of the money or all the money. And then hopefully one of them is going to be a real hit, right? So I think the statistics about investing in Broadway is a lot of times they'll say about 75% of shows don't recoup, don't make their money back. But that statistic is flawed because while that may be true for Broadway, if you invest in the originating company, and this is an important point.
Very important.
If you invest in the originating company, which may be Broadway, it may be London, it may be somewhere else, but normally it's either Broadway or London, typically. If you invest in the originating company and that show goes on to have a touring company or that show goes on to perform in London or various other parts of the world, depending on the underlying rights, you as an investor will have the right to invest in future productions. Further, all of those companies pay a royalty to the originating company. So for example, when I was working on Wicked, there were 8 companies of Wicked out. There was, you know, Broadway, there was 2 different tours around the US. There was a sit-down company in Chicago, a sit-down company in LA that then moved to San Francisco. There was a company in Germany, there was a company in London, and there's subsequently been a tour throughout the UK, there's been an international tour. So if you're an investor in that originating company, all of those companies are paying a royalty to that originating company, which then obviously eventually builds up to a distribution, let alone the fact that the originating Broadway production is still running and still profitable. So it's kind of compounding interest, if you will. You know, further, once all of the Broadway versions and the professional versions are done, there's what's called subsidiary rights. And the majority of these shows will go on to be performed. You know, think of a show like Annie. How many high schools and local community theaters do Annie? Well, if you're an originating investor in the company of Annie, for a certain number of years, you participate in all of those payments.
And the certain amount of years is usually happens after the show closes. Correct. On Broadway. So, you know, people who've invested in shows like Phantom of the Opera that's been running for, I don't know, like 30 years, yeah. Like that clock hasn't even started ticking yet.
So, yeah, so there are show investments.
They'll be passing those investments on to their heirs.
So, right? so like a apartment investment home run, like absolute home run, crush it, is like maybe you do 100, 150% return in 3 years, right? Or something like that.
Yeah.
What would be like a home run, like for like a Wicked, like if you put in 100 grand?
Probably hundreds of thousands of percent.
Well,
we've invested in a particular show that's doing really well, and it's been about 3 or 4 years, and it's got over 1,000% return.
Yeah.
I mean, so with Wicked that's been running for 15 years, at least tens of thousands of percent, I would guess.
Yeah.
We didn't invest in the Broadway Wicked.
Wicked's been running since 2002, 2003. So it's on its 13th or 14th. No, I think it was this year.
This is the 15th anniversary.
And I would think, I'd have to remember, I'm scratching some cobwebs back here because I used to work in the show then, but I think Wicked hit 150 or 200% certainly within the first 2 or 3 years.
Yeah.
And it's still running on Broadway and it still has subsequent productions. And that's, you know, 12 years
on. The thing
is
the exponential factor of being able to invest in the subsequent companies,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
A lot of times if we have a show that's successful, that's doing a tour or additional productions, right? Like let's say Hamilton, right? We invested in Hamilton. It was doing well. They were opening up another company and we just took some of the profits, not all of them, from the Broadway production,
right.
Put that into the next one, mm-hmm. and then the next one, and now there's 6 companies up and running.
Right.
So in that situation, you sort of parlayed your cash.
No, but I would say, yeah, we parlayed part of our cash, but not all of it. I mean, we, you know, if I'm making up, I'm completely making up numbers, but let's say it was, you know, $10 to invest in this additional production.
Which it's not, but.
I'm making up the numbers, but we already had like $20. So we were like, oh, well, we'll put 10 right. into that. And we already were doing
that. We were made whole and more. And so we took the more and invested okay. in, so the, you know, presents itself. But I think there's an important, two important points. And Lane, you said it's a lot about the person. I think that's 100% true. One bit of advice that I always give to people who are like, oh, my cousin's thinking about investing, or my cousin was approached about investing in a Broadway show. I always say, with who? And not necessarily the name of the person, but it's very important if you're looking at getting involved in investing in Broadway, that you know who the person you're investing through and how close or what is their relationship to the general partnership. So I am not just going to passively invest in something where I have no connection to the general partnership and most likely the general management company, yeah. because I want to at least have an understanding that these are people who I feel for whatever reason have a good track record or who have sound judgment or who I've seen can make good decisions. The last thing you want is someone treating it as other people's money and just spending, spending, spending. Similarly, if I'm raising money for a show, I will always put my own money in no matter what, because I do feel that you as part of the partnership make different decisions when you know that whether or not to buy a new TV spot, which is, could be, you know, a couple $100,000, that can significantly impact your ability to do distributions in the next 6 months, but it's going to, that's directly money that is essentially coming out of your pocket and those that you care most about, your investors in this situation. Out of their pocket. So I think, clearly, you're not taking more investment to make those things, but it's just from the profits, you know, choosing when to spend the expenses or when to distribute becomes the sole responsibility of the producer and the general managers. So yeah. who are those people and what would your relationship as an investor be to them depending on who you're investing through?
Just like apartment investing, right? Or any other kind of syndication investing, is who, no like or trust, right? You got to know the people.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. And so, yeah, so I think the two biggest things that we've discussed that to highlight are, is it the originating company just because yeah. of the potential for future, you know, investing in further companies plus the royalty that gets paid to the originating company? And then secondly, who are you investing through? Those are always the two key things to look out for, especially someone who's looking to break in or new at this.
So these guys, well, maybe we'll stop there because I think we got people salivating the mouth from this. And I was like, don't invest in this, guys. Like, this is something fun. If you're the 0.01% of people who listen to podcasts and actually follow through and do every single thing that people say, this is not for you. But anyway, let's talk about the dark side of this. So, like, they'll go out and raise $5, $20 million for a show. How does that budget get spent? And what's sort of the timeline till you actually start seeing some cash flow, right?
Sure. That's a great question. So...
Stabilize apartment, maybe like under a year, right? But are we looking at the same thing, this stuff?
Depending.
Generally.
Yeah. It depends. So a couple of things. It depends on when the money's being raised. Typically the money will be ultimately raised about 6 to 9 months before a show is opening on Broadway. And then
Because to be clear about that, you just gotta think about what's going on, right? They have to build the sets, they have to find the cast, they have to rehearse the show, right?
To put tickets on sale,
there's a lot of things that need to happen.
Yeah. So sometimes it may be further out, but that's when it's like really heating up and in fact, like that's when investments start closing because people will say, well, I'm getting fully committed in my share, and so tapping out, I've maxed out, which is great. It can go longer, but you know, you as a general partner really like to know that you have the money coming in, I'd say no later than 3 months before. Then that being said, no distributions can happen until the show has actually opened on Broadway. And similarly, no investments can be made once the show has opened on Broadway.
Because that would be a Ponzi scheme, right? To pay out cash flow without profits.
Correct. Well,
the interesting thing is you have these advanced sales of tickets. Oh. But the money's not counted until that performance happens.
Correct. So the money's not realized until the performance happens, because if the performance doesn't happen, you have to refund all the tickets.
So you might have a big, let's say you have this really big Broadway show and it's like a $15 million budget and it's got all this buzz or whatever and tickets go on sale. You could theoretically have $15 million worth of tickets sold before opening night, but none of that money counts until that performance actually happens.
Right. And I think there's a couple of things to keep in mind. A lot of shows might distribute within the first month or two of opening, but they're going to be cautious, right? As we've said, reviews sometimes matter a lot, sometimes they don't, but you have to see what the buying trends happen and how far out are you selling. If you release a block of 6 month tickets and they all sell pretty quickly, well, then you're going to know that you can probably distribute. And I've seen some shows do a 10, 20% distribution on opening night or within the first month or two. On a real hit show, on a juggernaut hit show, you would expect that you'd recoup your investment in the first 9 months to a year, I'd say. Wow. That's just you're recouping your investment. But that's on a real juggernaut that's churning out money and putting advanced blocks on sale. Otherwise, you may see 30 to 60% in that first year. And then it's a question of, does the show keep running? Which is a big kind of critical moment in a show's life. I guess in syndication, it's when you guys kind of say, like, do we sell now? Do we keep on to it? For Broadway, it's, can we keep ticket sales off enough? You know, you can run a show into the ground. Sure, you can just keep running a show and keep putting, you know, the money into it to just not make distributions. But that's not a responsible decision when you have investors.
Yeah.
The question becomes, when do you stop the show running and start that other clock in terms of subsidiary life, or is there a tour going out? You know, you're kind of looking at a bunch of different factors of when can a show stay in the market. Or
the other thing that's interesting, sort of two things I think that the listeners of the podcast would really like to know, which is, number one, the way that the distributions work and the return works. So the way that it works is you have your income minus your expenses, all of that profit goes right back to the investors up until you've recouped your initial investment. It's almost like a kind of like 100% pref, sort of, right? I mean, all of the profit that comes in goes to the investors until recoupment. Once you've hit recoupment, it usually, obviously, deals could be different, but typically it's a 50-50 split. So 50 to the general partner or the producer in this case, and 50% to the investor. That's number one. And number two is, in terms of the dark side, you know, there can be a dark side, and you can lose. The show could open up and close the next day, right? But typically what we see in a lot of these shows is, you may lose 25% of your money. You may lose 35%. You know, so you might not hit that full recoupment, but you're getting pretty close. So obviously, nobody likes to lose money, but that's. I mean, if you just want to be realistic about what's the risk when you're investing in something like this, there's more of a likelihood that you're going to lose some of it. There's not a high likelihood that you're going to lose all of it, and then there's a small likelihood that you're going to make $1 million.
Yeah, and there's also the tax. You know, like you were talking about with the oil investors, that I always say, if you love the arts and you're inclined to make a donation to a nonprofit arts company, you know, a year-end tax donation, you might as well invest in a Broadway show, because if your show, for whatever reason, loses the entire investment or part of the investment, you can write it off, right? There's a loss.
Regular business loss.
A regular passive loss.
Yeah.
If suddenly that show becomes a hit, you've just taken what would have been a donation to an arts entity and turned it into a positive investment. So that's my own little thinking that way. But there are, I think, most of the people who invest in Broadway, you know, if for whatever reason the show isn't as profitable and they don't make their money, I think they do understand that they were supporting the arts. That, you know, I always say you have to be passionate about what you're doing. Lane, you were asking earlier, you know, how do people find things to invest in? We were both passionate about the theater. I love the business side of theater. And I started raising money because I love supporting this art form, but I also, a lot of the shows that we work on, I'm passionate about what the show stands for, even if it's just entertainment, even if it's just a chance for people to laugh for 2.5 hours, you know, as part of their day.
It's important.
I think, you know, being a part of that is really, really special and really unique. So I feel, you know, I always say to my investors, I'm not going to sit here and promise you millions and millions of dollars. You may do very well with this investment. But I also am going to tell you all the reasons why I think this show has a good shot, but also the things about the show that I feel, you know, passionately about.
Kind of like reminds you of, like, you know, your friend has a comic book or like a children's book and you want to invest in that. You kind of know the people too, right? Partly investing in people you know and people you like.
Yeah. Certainly when I was getting started, you know, I was in my early 20s and I knew no one was going to write me a check for $1 million. But I did say, you are supportive of me having a career in this industry, this is how I get my start. And, you know, at that time it was mostly off-Broadway stuff, so the investments were considerably smaller, but I did go to a few people saying, I hope to, you know, grow up in this business. I really would love your support. And this is the show that I'm working on. And a lot of people did say that that was a motivating factor for them, because like any industry, you need to nurture the next wave of people. And that was great. I mean, I would feel very fortunate that way.
So going back, what Matt was saying, like the pref schedule or the I don't know what you call it, the profit splits, I guess.
Yeah.
So I've seen this kind of creep into apartment investing deals where they'll pay out investors first. The payout on the backside of that recoup is a lot less. I think a lot of the deals that Matt and I invest in, they're usually like 80-20 splits or 70-30 splits. It's super simple and you get the high side, right? Because the bad thing about the recoup is that if this thing absolutely hits a home run, then you only get 50-50% of that super high-end shelf.
Yeah, you know, I've heard.
Let me just say something about that, if I may. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's because when I first started, you know, really digging into it, I was like, this is weird with this 50-50 split. But the thing you have to understand is that the producer may work on a show for 7 years, right? Like Erica was saying, they're fronting all of those costs. They don't get any sort of acquisition fee. There's no disposition fee. They get something very small that might be considered like an asset management fee, but not really. It's very, very tiny. They have producers
obviously. Yeah, they're getting paid for their time via salary.
No.
Once the show's up and running, there is a sometimes there's a
sometimes the producers
fee,
have like an office fee,
but it's, I'm telling you, it's very, very minuscule compared to what we might have as that asset management fee on a real estate deal. But they've put 7 years of money and sunk cost, you know, could be in the tunes of tens to hundreds of thousands of dollars developing something that may or may not be a hit. So for them to, I think, give 100% of all the profits to the investors to upfront until they hit recoupment is actually great. And then afterwards, they're taking 50% on the back end. Me as an investor, I'm fine with it. Because at that point, those returns are going, they're not, it's not going, if you get to that point, okay, as far as I'm concerned, from what I've seen, you're not going to have a 200% return, which is like a home run in real estate, right? In real estate, you're looking for like 100% ROI in 5 to 6 years, right? If you were to get 200, that'd be like incredible.
Yeah.
If you're at a point where the show has recouped, especially if it's recouped within a year or so, that 50%, I mean, that thousands of percent ROI figure that I tossed out earlier, that was, say, that's considering the 50% already going to the producer. So mm-hmm. you're still getting extremely handsome returns.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And they can go on in perpetuity. With the real estate, a lot of times, especially when we're doing a value add, you kind of hit a ceiling and then it kind of like stops and you can maybe get that 10% cash on cash. Maybe there's a refi situation where you pulled it out. You're still getting that 10%, but on a Broadway show, that thing can run forever and you'll be getting a lot more if it's a hit.
I mean, from a syndicator's point of view, it's a tough sell, right? Because it's a very risky investment. So by putting that 100% recoup pref in there, that sort of makes it a little more appetizing to investors, just from a buyer-seller standpoint of investors. And
Yeah, well, I think so.
Yeah. If Shell loses money, and so you lose some of your investment money, you're like, well, at least the producer didn't like take profits, you know.
No.
And so I think that's a good thing. It's and the money that people should be investing in something like this is really discretionary funding, right?
Yeah.
I mean, Elaine, I know that what you talk about sort of that holy grail, right? Of like having a mobile home park and a single family and a multifamily and coffee farms and, you know, all these different types of investments, which is nice, and it's a really smart and prudent way to invest, right? You're investing in different. It's all sort of real estate based, but sort of different areas within that real estate to kind of give yourself some diversity. So you're doing a, you know, a self storage unit and a multifamily, right? This is something that is not, it's not real estate, but it can fit into someone's portfolio, but it should be a small part. Like you don't, you're not going to, you only have 100K to invest. Don't put it all in a Broadway show. but you can put 25 in a Broadway show and 75 in a bunch of other stuff. Or, you know, maybe, you know, it's 5% of your portfolio when you, it's just like investing, I think, in VC or tech things, like you're saying, like if you do put a little bit of money into those things, and if one of those pops, you know, look, if you would have put $10,000 in a Facebook, like, you know, however long ago when Mark Zuckerberg started it, you'd be a multimillionaire right now. I'm not saying that's going to happen with the Broadway show. I'm just saying there's that sort of risk reward thing that's going on there.
So if there's like a family out there, net worth, maybe $2 to $5 million, mm-hmm. what would be your recommendation of their portfolio being in something, maybe not specifically Broadway shows, but more discretionary, like a tech startup or a friend?
You know, I don't know. I mean, when I look at our portfolio and the way that we've been kind of doing it, we're investing in a tech startup right now. We've invested in Broadway shows. I mean, I think Erica's fact that she's involved in it is even makes us do stuff more, but maybe 15 to 20% of our portfolio, maybe even more, is in sort of some of these more discretionary buckets. And we have a lot of stuff in real estate because that's what I do. And like Erica was saying, every time I do a real estate syndication, I'm putting my own money into it, right? We're doing the Broadway shows only like once every 2 or 3 years. So it's just, we put our money in that, mm-hmm. but it's not nearly on the frequency level.
Well, right? Yeah, I mean, and to be clear, because we're right now in a good situation where we have potentially two hits on our hands, we're keeping that money for those subsequent productions.
Sure. And you guys are sort of insiders too. You guys,
yes, she is.
I mean, yeah, I'm in the business. So it's just like if you're in, parallel is, but I guess it's like if you're in real estate and you know that, you know, Related is going to put in a new building over here, you may not want to buy the apartment building across the street. You know, I think I'm just aware of what other shows might be coming in. I'm aware of what artists might be working on shows. I'm aware. I certainly have my own preference for producers that I like, right, to work with often, and general managers. So, you know, but it's all personal, right? It's all relationships and it's all personal. So you could speak to someone else who does real estate, who does Broadway fundraising and investing, and they'll have their own experience and they'll have their own preferences. So it's very
similar. Erica's tied in on it on a daily basis too, yeah, with what she's doing at the, yeah, at the Colonial. Plus she worked on Broadway for how many years did you work on Broadway? 20. You know, some of her friends and our friend, like, mm-hmm, you know, our friends are, but most of our friends, I'd say, are involved in theater. So we talk with them. We know what projects they're working on.
So Erica, like, what is, like, other than like the people, the key people you like, what is a nuance that you kind of pick up on evaluating a deal outsider wouldn't even kind of think of? Maybe just make their experience at the theater a little bit more sophisticated, I guess.
I mean, I evaluate the budget, but I know budgets incredibly well. But I'm sure it's the same. It's no different than when you guys are looking at, like, oh, they're putting this cap rate on it, but we know the taxes in this market are going to be this. So, the broker's not necessarily showing this and the other. When I look at a Broadway budget and I start to see, like Matt was saying earlier, there's normally like a producer office charge. If suddenly there was a producer office charge that was really high, I'd be like, wow, who's this person? And what do they think they're getting away with here?
You know, right. So like a 4% acquisition fee first day, right? Like, that's crazy.
Right.
Exactly.
I know what's happening here.
And there are. I mean, trust me, you know, just like you guys have a offering memorandum and a PM, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So, like, we have what's called offering documents and subscription documents.
It's exactly
like,
same exact stuff.
Same stuff, but definitely it has like bold, like, do not do this investment, you know, but most of our most investments go to accredited investors.
I mean, for people who are a little more sophisticated, a lot of the stuff she's doing is a 506C, right? Mm-hmm. So that's okay. A lot of,
yeah.
She's usually
it's SEC regulated. Depending on the total capitalization, there will be a limit of how many total investors can be involved. You do sign an affidavit saying that you're either sophisticated or accredited. But all of those things are pretty standard in investing.
But a lot of them sometimes are, I don't know if it's a lot of them, but like the last one, you had to be accredited.
Right. Yeah. It depends. It's set by the show. It totally depends. And you have to follow those rules, obviously. But again, I will just look at the budget and I'll ask questions, you know. And again, it's the importance of my relationship with whoever that producer or general manager is that I can say, hey, can you just describe this to me? Or can you tell me? Or, hey, I saw this. You know, Matt's totally right. It typically goes 50-50 after recoupment. I've seen some that they're sliding scales, that when we get to 200% recoupment or when we get to 300% recoupment, and it changes.
You might, like a typical waterfall that you might see in a real estate investment, you hit a certain IRR and it goes from 70-30 to 50-50 or something like that.
Now, I personally, thus far in my investing, have not signed up for one of those subscription documents. I've seen them. But again, it just depends on your... You have to read, like anything, you have to read the fine print, you have to ask questions, you have to understand. And again, it's like you said, how much faith and trust you have in the people who are handling the purse strings there, because they can make a decision to do a whole new advertising campaign when the show's not selling really well, which may be the right thing to do. But on the other hand, I don't know if you want them spending a ton of money when the show's dying. So those are the hard questions that shows confront. You know, when do you know that an apartment investment has just become a money pit and you just need to get out of it, right? Same kind of thing. But again, it's your relationship with those people there. And again, looking at the subscription documents and the offering documents and understanding how you follow where the money's going and to whom and who's managing it.
One thing I kind of picked up, you know, if you go with an average budget of $10 million and you pay these salaries, you know, there's a certain burn rate of like just the operating costs per week.
And that's spelled out in the documents.
Mm-hmm. It's in the documents. Yeah.
It's just like your operating budget on a real estate deal, right? You've got your expenses that you're accounting for. So they've got to account for royalties. They've got to account for the cast. They have to account for the rental of the place, the advertising
budget,
all that.
You know, and again, there's pretty set costs in general, but the big variable will be your advertising. And then if you are going to bring in a star, or if, you know, there are different things that can kind of hit the show in general, but hopefully your general manager has built the budget with those expectations. You know, you do have two budgets on Broadway. You have your capitalization budget, which is all of your upfront costs, your costumes, your set design, your build, your developmental costs are all rolled into your capitalization. But then you have your weekly operating budget, and then you can kind of see the grosses are reported most of the time.
Yeah.
They're certainly reported to the investors. And then you know, if your show costs $500,000-$600,000 a week to run, but you're only grossing $700,000, there's a little bit of profit in there, but not a lot, right? If you're grossing $1.5 million a week, well, you're almost hitting $1 million in profit there a week. A certain amount certainly goes set aside for operational reserves and running costs. Broadway, like any industry, has swings. There's seasonality to Broadway as well, just like there is retail or
any the next 2 weeks are going to be incredible. If you look at the grosses on Broadway, they'll be huge because Christmas time.
It's holiday.
Yeah.
But January, the first 2 weeks of January can be really slow. The first few weeks of September with back to school and religious holidays and
August is a
can be
month.
Slow, but summer tourism can be really high. So you look at that layered into what's happening with your show and your advertising plans because...
And they'll use that to decide when to do distributions, which could be quarterly. They could be less frequently, or if you have a big hit, it can be monthly.
Frequently, yeah.
So a lot of like, I guess in apartment investing, you've got cash reserves, right? Because I'm thinking, and I might be wrong on this, you might have a good play on your hand that's not one of the 75% of the duds. But there's you got to keep it running, right, for a little bit to get, you know, for a catch, right? Like, how does that kind of work?
Some shows will be getting close to, you know, maybe didn't get great reviews and they're not selling really well, but it's getting close to the Tonys. So they just want to hold out until the Tony Awards, because if they get that Tony Award, I mean, actually, Erica, you have.
Yeah, I did. I had that happen,
right?
with a play of mine that was literally, you know, the big New York Times critics do like a who will win and who should win, and they all kind of weigh in. And our show, which was like the little engine that could play at the time, which I love this play more than anything, but it was up against this like huge, you know, James Gandolfini for the first time ever, and The Sopranos had just finished, you know, had just had its final season. And James Gandolfini, what did he do? Like most Hollywood people, when they're on a successful show, they go to Broadway and do like a 20-week run of a Broadway show, which is great. And it's really fun for the industry when that happens.
It was a great show.
It was a great show. It was a hilarious comedy called God of Carnage, that show. That was not the show I was on. I was on the other show. And the show I was on was like this little off-Broadway play that got transferred to Broadway with these like New York actors. And they,
it was awesome.
And they've all gone on, I will say, to have amazing careers. And those actors now are household names. But at the time, they were not. But it was a great play. And it was this kind of debate of like, what should win, this like off-Broadway scrappy play that's now on mainstream Broadway and people love it, or what's most likely going to win is also a very good play, but it is selling out and it has James Gandolfini and it's so, it was James Gandolfini, Marcia Gay Harden, Jeff Daniel, and anyway, the other actress escapes me at the moment, but it was a huge juggernaut of a play. And literally up until the Tony Awards, even at that night when I was sitting in my seat, I had hope, because if we won, it would have completely changed, because we would have been the play that won and people would have bought tickets and we would have been able to run probably for another year. If we didn't win, we knew we were going to close the show. So it was literally up until they opened the envelope and then the other show won.
But you guys were limping along at the end there.
At the end, we wanted to keep it running
in case it did, because if it hit the Tony, there's a very high likelihood that it would do really well. But then if it didn't win the Tony, which it didn't,
And it did. Close 2 weeks later. But it was a great show. And
so the producer, that's something that producer's got to be able to make that calculated risk. Like, do I spend the money and keep it going? Because, you know, or do I just close it down, return to investors some of their profits? Or do we hold on hoping that we're going to get this thing? So, you know, questions and things like that need to be decided all the time that producers need to figure out. Yeah.
What does it take to make one cup of coffee? What are the stories contained in a single cup? Who is this handsome man?
For most of you I talked to in our free intro coaching calls, I see a theme of mission and investing for greater good. I found an investment that be improving the lives of their community by improving living conditions and paying for children's education. To learn more about this investment, check out Simple Passive Cashflow /coffee. This specialty coffee makes for an amazing performer.
Similar to like even apartments, right? Like you could have a apartment kind of limping along. You got like 60% in 3 years to your investors, which is not bad. But then you hold on and potentially wait for something to happen and get 150% in 5 or 6 years, right? Like, I mean, the producer may want to, or the syndicator may want to just get it on their resume for that higher amount. The same thing with the producer, right? Get it on the resume.
Well, but no, I think the important thing to remember there is that the distributions don't necessarily stop when the show stops playing on Broadway.
This is where it gets really important with the person, right? So hopefully you're investing in somebody who you think is going to make the, you know, right fiduciary decision for the investors. And that comes down, I think, to almost a character question, you know? I mean, the person could want to do something just to get something on their resume. You know, hopefully that's not in, hopefully that is in the interest of the investor. You know, Hopefully you're not investing in someone who's doing things just for their resume, regardless of what happens to the investor.
And this is a real personal, like, tolerance question too. Like, for me, my own criteria of evaluating the lead producer is dependent on a ton of factors. One of which is how many other shows are they working on at that time, which isn't necessarily a deterrent, but as a producer, like we said, it's not like you have a regular salaried income, because unless the shows are running, you have no income to draw from, right? A lot of times producers will have 4 or 5 projects in the hopper that they're working and don't necessarily know which one's going to time out when. I've worked with plenty of producers who will pause one show so that it's not competing with another show so that they can focus. And I fully respect that decision, because I think that's a very mature decision, as opposed to just trying to like force feed both because this actor's available or this director's available or the theater becomes available. You have to know what you can tolerate and manage, I think, as a lead producer. And there are plenty of producers who can manage 2 or 3 shows running at the same time. And there are others who choose not to. I think it's also different. Once a show's up and running, a lot of the management stuff, the day-to-day, falls to the general manager. Once it's up and running and successful and ticket sales are going strong, and then a producer may then start to focus on their next show. I think it's very different to then have 2 shows in the same season that are opening against each other. So I think that's something for your listeners to think about, of asking you know, do you know what other shows this producer is working on at this time? Is this their sole focus? What's the overall timeline here relative to other shows they're working on?
So there's like a little bit of a run length that they built the performer that we need to at least survive for this long with our initial capital.
Oh, that's a recoupment schedule. So part of the original investing documents that you will analyze is what's called a recoupment schedule, which will show...
It's their pro forma.
But it basically says, at an average ticket price of X, here are our expenses, and we need to run for Y weeks to make up those expenses. It's pretty simple, but then it'll show at like 100%, like if we're selling out every night, at 90%, 80%. When we evaluate a recoupment schedule, we're normally looking between 60 and 70%. Because like you said, Lane, it takes time to build an audience a lot of times. It's very rare that a show is a hit out of the gate and immediately gets the audience selling out every night.
And you have to look at the average ticket price, because if the average ticket price is a ridiculous price that they're never going to get, it doesn't matter what the percentage is.
Nope.
And the other thing is, a lot of times there's these group sales. So when group sales is coming in and buying something, you can have a theater that it's 100% full, but between group sales and maybe discounted tickets, they're not paying 100% of the average ticket price. Well, that was in the recoupment schedule. It might be 80, it might be 90, it might be 100. In some cases, when you have a big hit, like a Hamilton, it's 102, 110%, right? But a lot of times, it can be a little smaller, even though the house is packed.
Right, and if your average ticket price is actually higher than what's in the recoupment schedule, you're probably doing very well.
Yes.
So those are just key, you know, key performance indicators to kind of keep an eye on if you're watching.
It's kind of like your rental rate. You know, I always equate this to syndication. So that percentage that we're talking about, that's kind of like your occupancy, right? So we need to keep a certain occupancy. But then if your rental rate is lower, or maybe you have some loss to lease or whatever, your economic occupancy actually goes down. And that's kind of how it relates to, you know.
And that's actually how I'm kind of investing or learning other asset classes, right? Because people branch out from apartments and like we can talk the same language. Oh, it's like this on apartments. Oh,
okay. Yeah. I mean, it's funny when we talk about syndications, we're literally like, oh, this is it. Oh, wait, literally, it's literally the same document. Like literally, you know, I may use it the escrow attorney, use a more specific real estate attorney, but overall it's the same concept and the same principle. And again, you know, you're talking for the most part about people's discretionary spending as well.
Right. So here's something that like me and Matt kind of deal with all the time. When we're kind of showing like a deck to investors, people will always look at like the splits, right? Like, oh, is it 80-20 split or is it a 70-30 or whatever, 85-15? And they'll say, oh, I don't want to invest because I just saw an 80-21 the other day, 70-30, right? And then, right. You know, Matt and I probably bang our head against the wall because it's like, that has nothing to do with the deal. You didn't. Right. What are the rent increases? What's the reversion cap rate? What's the full occupancy assumptions? People are just looking at the wrong things. What is something, when you kind of show it to your folks, what is like something like that as an example that people are just looking at the wrong thing?
Oh,
capitalization is the wrong
100%.
Thing. So many people will say to me, Wicked at its time was, I think, capitalized at $14 million, which, you know, 15 years ago, that was a lot of money for a musical. Now a lot more musicals are trending in the 20s, but I, you know, have heard people say, oh, I'm at $20 million. How do you make back $20 million in 2 years? Well, dynamic pricing, you know, I mean, there are ways to do it, but again, it's like, if a show costs a lot of money, it doesn't necessarily mean you'll never make that money back. It's what's the corresponding ticket sales going for? What is the audience going for? What's the brand behind the show? So I just don't think you can categorically say, oh, I won't invest in a show that's more than an $18 million cap. Oh, really? Okay.
That's what we hear a lot.
We hear that. I hear that a lot.
Like, there's not, on these shows, there's not like a presentation deck like we do on real estate, trusting in the person. And then you get the documents and inside the subscription agreement and the PPM, it will have like that recoupment schedule.
Right.
But that's about it in terms of like something to look at. It's a lot more subjective than objective, where real estate is a lot more objective. You know, we're going to sell this, you know, this rent increase, and you're going to have this many people in this occupancy, yada, 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 this cap rate, where with the theater, it's kind of like, do people like it? Yeah. Are people going to it? critics like it? Does it win awards? There's all these other things that are kind of like mixed in.
I was going to say, we're going to do a first one podcast. I have to get the brownies out of the oven.
Hold on. I'll be right back. Brownies. Can't let them burn.
But that's the nice thing about working from home, right?
Indeed. Well, she's got to get back into the office.
Yeah, so I think we'll kind of wrap this up here. Matt, you want to get your – Matt's an apartment investor, by the way, which is really the bread and butter. And Matt, I've kind of always told Matt to give me a call when the next Tony deal comes up. I want to be a Tony Award winner, right? Do we get to come up on the stage to the LPs?
Amazing. Let me tell you this. There's a whole thing in Broadway investing where people are like, I want my Tony Award. And here's what I will say. I've worked in the industry for almost 20 years. I do not yet have my Tony Award. But I will say it's really great to get checks every month or so, whether or not you have a nice little silver award that spins. Don't get me wrong. I'd love to have a Tony Award, but I'd love for it to be for a show that we worked hard on. And I think the real answer to your question is no, the investors don't get to go on stage. The co-producers get to go on stage. Even that can be limited.
If you're unbelievably wealthy, you could try to buy a Tony, right? If you were to invest a large sum of money in maybe a play, like let's say you put $1 million in a play, the lead producer might give you a producer title. Mm-hmm. In which case, if that play won, you would go up on the stage. I mean, that's a scenario that could happen and has happened.
And some people are just lucky. It's rare. You know? Yeah, it's rare. I think the biggest thing to know is as an investor, you many times, there are different benefits at different levels, right? Depending on how much you invest. But many times you get access to house seats, which are the seats that are specifically reserved for the producers with limitations. It's not like you can go every Saturday night, you know. You can.
But as investors in Hamilton, mm-hmm. it was this massive hit. No one could get tickets. We were able not to get a lot, but like her parents went. We sent my parents to
specific,
it.
You know, specific instances, you can put in a request and you do have access to tickets that aren't available to the public. You typically get invited to opening night, depending on how many investors and producers there are. But obviously, that's all spelled out for you when you invest. If the show is nominated for a Tony Award, you typically, as a co-producer, the show's nominated as a co-producer, you can buy tickets to the Tony Awards, which are not cheap. Investors, tickets are on sale to the public for the Tony Awards, but they do restrict who goes on stage. Otherwise, think of on a $20 million musical, the co-producers are probably raising between $1 million to $2 million themselves. So you already have 10 co-producers, and then each co-producer probably has anywhere from 5 to 10 people. So you'd have
100 people on stage.
Plus the cast, plus the designers. You know, so there's just not physically room. But a lot of, you know, I will say, if you like the arts, if you like live entertainment, and you have disposable income, discretionary spending available to you, it's certainly a fun world to be a part of, and you certainly do see on a regular basis, you'll get financial reports, and you'll see how the business of theater works, and it really is, it is nuanced, but it's quite
fascinating. You know, we raised money for Moulin Rouge, which is going to Broadway this summer. It was in Boston last summer, and there was tons of people, and a lot of the people who were investing were real estate investors, and, you know, they invested in this, and they came to Boston, and they saw the show, and they had an awesome weekend in Boston, and you know, it looks promising. It got great reviews. Advanced ticket sales are going really well. Hopefully, we'll all make a couple bucks from it. But it's a fun and exciting thing to be involved in.
Yeah. Hopefully, we'll be on the stage at the Tony Awards next, you know, June. But, like, I would say I wouldn't invest in a show to get a Tony Award. I would invest in a show for many other reasons, especially looking at a sound. Is the investment good? The things like Tony Awards, where the Tony Award makes a difference is in the life of your show. Winning a Tony Award can significantly improve your investment because it significantly heightens the awareness of your show out to the general market. So from an investing standpoint, when your show wins a Tony Award, you get very excited because you've just gotten
a huge
advertising bump, and you'll see it immediately in ticket sales, which is great.
Similar to, like, if you invested in, I don't know, some market, and then, like, Amazon opens up, you know, a headquarters with 20,000 new jobs in it, right? Like, you're like, whoa, this is great.
But that would be only, like, maybe a 200% return, right? This is, like, if you're watching the Tonys at home and your thing wins, you're talking, what, 1,000, 2,000%.
Theoretically, not every show that wins the Tony does that well.
It's so funny. We almost said that. Very true. If your show wins the Tony,
it's extremely likely that you'll recoup your investment. And then, you know, you just keep getting money not perpetually, but for a long time thereafter because you've got that originating company. So even when the show does close on Broadway, all the residual things will be paying in. But if it hits the Tony, you're probably going to have a tour or two that go out, and we'll probably have the opportunity to invest in those, depending on exactly how the deal is structured.
Yeah.
So it's kind of like a big deal to win the Tony.
It's a big.
But if you don't win it, it doesn't mean that's the end.
No, like definitely. I would say also the reason the Tony Awards are so important to Broadway is it's actually, they call it Broadway's biggest night for a reason. It's the one night of the year where the rest of the world, the average person, actually pays attention to Broadway when they normally, not to say they normally don't, but it's not normally at the forefront of people's minds. And I do think that specifically CBS where it's broadcast, but the theater community has kind of capitalized on that Tony Sunday as being this is the night where people all around the country are actually tuning in to Broadway. And you get to wear a nice dress.
Well, I'll be watching at home. But Matt and Erica, why don't you give folks your information, email address, or URL? Maybe people get a hold of you and learn a little bit more about this stuff, about yourselves. Matt does apartment investing too.
I do. If you want to find out about that, you can email me, Matt, M-A-T-T, at mjppg.com. That's also my website, mjppg.com. You can find out more about me there. But more importantly, for the Broadway stuff, although we work together as a partnership, it's probably best to reach out directly to Erica first.
Yeah, and I have a website called avalonroad.net. There's a way to contact me through that website, so you can find me there.
All right, guys. Yeah, something fun. Again, don't invest in this if you're not willing to lose it, discretionary or disposable, whatever you want to call it. And we'll see you guys next time. Thanks, guys.
Thanks for having us on the podcast.
Thank you. Bye.
This website offers very general information concerning real estate for investment purposes. Every investor situation is unique. Always seek the services of licensed third-party appraisers and inspectors to verify the value and condition of any property you intend to purchase. Use the services of professional title and escrow companies and licensed tax, investment, and or legal advisor before relying on any information contained herein. Information is not guaranteed, as in every investment there is risk. The content found here is just my opinion, and things change, and I reserve the right to change my mind. Above all else, do your own analysis and think for yourself, because in the end, you are the only person who is going to look out for your best interests.
The proceeding is not tax, legal, or investment advice, nor an offer to sell securities or investment products. Always make informed decisions with professional guidance. Get educated and surround yourself with a community at thewealthelevator.com/club.